Hey team, you're about to experience my interview with Josh Ledgard, the founder of Kickoff Labs. Kickoff Labs is a gamification platform for e-commerce growth. Kickoff Labs allows you to run viral giveaways, turn fans into influencers with leaderboards, referral rewards, and product launches and the like. They allow you to run multiple different types of campaigns concurrently that dramatically increases the engagement of your customers and your fans directly through your own website. Enjoy. This is the E-Commerce Edge podcast with your host, Jason Greenwood. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the podcast. It is my absolute pleasure to welcome Josh Ledgard from Kickoff Labs to the podcast. Welcome, Josh.
It's great to be here. Thanks, Jason.
It's super cool to have you along for the ride today. We're gonna talk about your technology and what it does. And I was mentioning off air that I think that what your technology does seems to be pretty unique and novel. In fact, I don't think I've ever had technology like yours featured on the podcast before. So congratulations on that. But before we dive right into the deep end of the tech and what it does in relation to e-commerce, tell me how you came to be in this space, because as I look back across your resume, there's nothing that I can see straight away that would allude to the fact that you come from a software engineering background, but you've worked for big tech companies pretty much all your career. And then all of a sudden you make this hard left turn towards e-commerce and e-commerce technology. And I'd love to know what you obviously this was not a recent change. Yep. This happened over a decade ago. It feels like it was a pretty intentional decision to get into the e-com space, because it's not like you spent 20 years in e-com and then decided to build a technology platform.
No, absolutely. No, all the decisions were actually very intentional. It feels like a hard left turn. And I think to some of my family, it felt like a hard left turn going from working at like Microsoft and other larger tech companies. But along my own career, like I'd always viewed it as, what skill do I want to learn to get to the next level? What do I want to do for myself? And just after working for big tech, and then I worked for like a medium-sized company that was building they were building an audience like community platform. So before like social networks were big, it was like blogs, wikis, like online support forums, like things like that still existed. And they were building a platform for big tech for those companies. And as I got smaller and I got in higher roles at those companies, I still realized this: I really don't own much of the equity behind this. And so it was like a selfish thing of, if I really want to get the equity out of a business, then you need to really own it, and you need to like, or have a much larger share of it, or negotiate yourself a larger share. And so that necessitated me wanting to start my own thing. Now, in terms of why like e-commerce, we got to there. So after my co-founder and I decided to start a company, we evaluated a lot of business ideas and quite literally did the 4-hour work week thing where we put up a whole bunch of landing pages of like different ideas we had, because we had like maybe 50 ideas. It went from like a blog about beer all the way to reading Twitter for like big companies and being like Hootsuite competitor. Like Hootsuite didn't really exist back then, but something like that. And we're like, as tech people, we're like, hey, we built these landing pages. We should see, maybe we should build something that makes testing these ideas easier. So Kickoff Labs started as an idea testing platform that we built for ourselves. And so we said, let's put up a page for that. And then that page and one other page really started to take off. The other page was this kind of social media listening idea, but that was a much harder enterprise sale. And as we got into Kickoff Labs, we followed the customer set that was coming to us. So people were starting to say, not just should I build my startup, but should I build like this online store, or should I do this? Should I set this store up? So it really started as mostly just startups like building like a landing page saying, if I wanted to do a drop shipping store about this, or if I wanted to do this Amazon store dedicated to this specific product, would I be able to build an audience? And they wanted to test that they could build an audience, because that was the key. And I think we really liked working with all of those small business customers. My co-founder and I had spent years working in big tech, as you said, and there's a lot of great stuff to that, but there's also the downsides of the types of customers that you work with and the demands from, if a company is paying you $3 million for something, that's very different than having 1,000 people paying you $99 a month for something. And the types of people you get to choose who you work with is much nicer. And so again, selfishly, we're like, let's work with these smaller businesses. Like, this is really nice helping people get going. It creates a good feeling. And then the product evolved over time. If people were testing ideas and they said, oh, could we do referrals? yeah, sure. A bunch of people who are paying us were asking for a feature. We would build that feature. And then people said, this is really nice. Could I start scoring the people who were coming into the site? Oh, sure. We can add scoring. And then as the platform evolved, it's, hey, could I do a giveaway? Like now that I've scored people for coming to my site, for signing up, for maybe even like making a purchase, could I do a giveaway that they've earned like credits or points to, or like tickets to in a raffle? And we're like, yeah, it's a giveaway platform too. Let's build that feature of helping you pick a winner. And it's really been customer-led growth, is that as we've followed the customer set that's come to us and we've looked at what's been successful for people, it always starts with one person abusing your platform and doing something it's not really meant for. And then you help them do it. They find a lot of success. And then you see, can you replicate that across five other people? And then five other people do it. And you're like, all right, let's actually make this an official part of the product. And you make it an official part and you get more of those customers. And so that's my long story of how we ended up building Kickoff Labs into a giveaway platform where we have a lot of e-commerce customers using it for doing their giveaways and promotions as a way of engaging and growing their email audience.
Wow, what an amazing story. A startup helping startups and eating your own dog food. That saying comes up quite a lot, I think, in Silicon Valley. It's like they love companies that are actually building something where they are the use case. So they really understand that market and they understand the unique proposition that they bring to the table. They understand what they're going to have to do from a go-to-market perspective, et cetera, et cetera. So it feels like a very natural progression for you. But it also seems like the market for your services wasn't necessarily e-commerce to begin with. It feels like that was an evolution over time. So even if I look at your website today, the only platform, at least that I'm aware of, from an e-commerce perspective that you integrate with out of the box is Shopify, no one else. And so there's obviously a lot of other e-commerce platforms out there. There's a lot of other e-commerce focused enablement technology out there, but it feels like you've gone for that fat middle part of the market where Shopify lives in the B2C, D2C world. And that's really largely the focus of the e-commerce portion or the e-commerce functionality or modules within your platform. But obviously you integrate with a lot of other e-commerce enablement technology, the likes of the Klaviyos and the MailChimps of the world, marketing automation platforms and the like. So at what point did you double click on the e-commerce thing and say, wow, this is a thing? Because when you guys started over a decade ago, SaaS e-commerce enablement technology wasn't really that common yet. There was a lot of on-prem stuff. There was a lot of custom and bespoke stuff. There wasn't even Shopify. Wasn't really, I don't even think they were around yet at that point, actually. I can't remember exactly when they started, but I don't think they even existed yet. So it feels like a very intentional and very structured path to get into and wedged into the e-commerce ecosystem.
Yeah, again, it was following where the market was going. So at first, a lot of our customers were like, if they had a website, they had a WordPress website. If they started to do e-commerce, they're maybe plugging in like a PayPal link. Like they're starting like that very early parts of e-commerce were like a WordPress website with a PayPal links. And then it was like WooCommerce and a couple of the WordPress commerce engines. I forget exactly which ones were the earliest ones, but there were some that were really early players in the space of building a shop on top of WordPress that was popular before Shopify became more market dominant. But then Shopify came in and standardized the market in a certain way for that tier of customers, for that tier of stores, and said, listen, like all this WordPress plugins, you're just like shoehorning this in until it doesn't really fit. Nowadays, they're a lot better and they've grown up a lot. But at the time, it was really just people were shoehorning it into other website platforms or it didn't really work. And we were watching that kind of from the sidelines because as ourselves, like we're helping people grow an audience. And so our customers at a root are growing an audience. And we didn't really need the e-commerce functionality to let people do a giveaway. So the specific e-commerce functionality that we enable, for example, is tracking when somebody makes a purchase on your store, confirming that the purchase, seeing if they referred a friend, seeing if the referred friend makes a purchase. So we're tracking that payment referral in a way like some of those other referral tools you're doing, but for the purpose of ensuring that we can have them as entries in a contest. Right. And that's how we're doing the referral tracking is not just, oh, you referred one or two friends and they get a discount and you share that discount. We're doing like, you want to run a contest and you want to give people extra entries in the contest for referring the friend. And that all came from requests from those people who were building these e-commerce sites even before there was Shopify. So it was intentionally following the market of our customers saying, this is something we would like to do. And then in terms of ending up integrating with Shopify, as you said, that big part of the market is once they became, we had a specific WordPress integration for a long time, but because the market was so fragmented at the time, there wasn't a unified like system that felt like it was worth building a plugin for, because I'd pull five customers and they're all using a different tool. I'm like, I'm not building a tool for plugin for one of you guys. But when Shopify came along and you started seeing like five customers in a row, here's my Shopify store. Can I build a contest into it? Here's my Shopify. When you get like that fifth customer, like I said, is that fifth one to me is always the validation. Like, all right, now it becomes worth doing a stronger connection to the Shopify ecosystem. And then you look at the stat. They really, outside of Amazon, they really are the biggest player in the space now by far.
And it also feels like you went down, or you almost helped to create what we now know as gamification in e-commerce, right? It feels like this was a very early version of gamification. There's lots of different types of that now, from spin to wins and all sorts of JavaScript gamification that can be put on the front end of Shopify. But it feels like you guys really took quite a distinctive track to this. Was, we're going to create a competition almost, I don't want to, you're probably going to say, no, it's nothing like that, but I almost think of it like a raffle where you enter to win. That's the model where it's, okay, you've got to enter this contest, then you may or may not win, and then there's some sort of reward that you get on the backside of that, usually some sort of monetary reward, but not always. It could be merch, it could be almost anything really, but it feels like you guys had a very clear view on what gamification and engagement would look like through your platform, and that you stuck with that model. And then there's been lots of other forms of gamification that followed after you, even down to what I like to call quiz commerce, whereas if you go to a hair coloration website, you put in all the details about your hair and the types of hair that you have and the color that you have and the color you're targeting and all the rest, then they save that information as attributes of that customer. And then maybe sometimes the reward is just, hey, we're going to recommend the right product for you. But sometimes they can take that a step further and say, if you complete this and we hold this information to make your journey better, we're also going to give you a store credit of 20 bucks or whatever it might be, or we're going to give you a coupon code or whatever it might be. And so there's been, I think, probably four or five common forms of gamification that have come along since then. But I haven't ever seen one before. And maybe you're literally a player of one, and you have no competition, but it feels like this is a very distinct form of gamification.
I would say it is a distinct form of gamification. I wouldn't say we have no competitors, but I appreciate that. No, it is an intentional, distinct form of gamification because, like I said, of our background in doing social media tools and even at big commerce or big tech, what I was working at before, I was working on a lot of community and customer engagement. I've always had a strong belief that, like that exchange that you said, where you're doing the quiz or entering, like, that the best way to engage your customers is not to always be like shouting, whether it be ads or the newsletters that come out on a regular basis. Like, that can be a part of your communication process. And I'm not saying you shouldn't run ads, but I've always hated like when it feels as a business owner that your only option to engage your customers is like, I can send a newsletter or I can run ads. And you're not giving them any chance to engage with you or engage with your brand. So I do also like that quiz model that you mentioned as well. We don't currently offer like advanced quizzes. We do have people that do simple things, like they'll put a contest and choose your favorite version of the product, like A or B, and they'll set that up on their store. But like in terms of like your choose your hairstyle quiz or something like that, to me, that's a similar psychological response, which is you're asking somebody to participate, give you some extra information about themselves, but you're doing it in exchange for something on the back end. You're either making them, like you said, a recommendation, or you're entering them in this contest. There's a back and forth to the engagement that doesn't exist when you're simply sending a newsletter, that doesn't exist when you're simply posting a blog entry, or doesn't certainly exist when you're just running an ad that goes to like your Cyber Week sale that you're running.
And you've moved way past the standard, what we think of as a sweepstakes type model. You've had that, you always had that was premise, but you've expanded that to quote unquote campaign types, what a traditional marketer or a digital marketer might think of as different campaign types. Mm-hmm. So you've got, of course, the entry sweepstakes, you've got pre-launch waitlist, you've got reward level giveaways, you've got email opt-in bribes, you've got newsletter referrals, so that you are expanding, I guess, the type, even leaderboard giveaways. And I feel like this is expanding on the theme. So it's still very much a similar theme and type of model, but it feels like you've expanded that over time to encompass different engagement models. Because whereas, for example, I might not engage with a brand based on a sweepstakes because I don't want to give a whole bunch of information. I don't want the hassle of signing up or subscribing or something like that. But I might sign up for a leaderboard sweepstakes because when I think about, for example, with Duolingo, one of the things that's now I'm living in Mexico and I'm having to brush up on my Spanish and get better. And it feels like Duolingo, because they run a leaderboard model, it feels like I tend to stay more engaged with their platform because as I, like if I skip a day or 2 days or 3 days, I slide down that leaderboard. And it's like, man, I worked so hard to get there. I want to get back in and I want to at least spend 10 minutes a day, 20 minutes a day, at least maintaining my place on the leaderboard and going up. And there's just something, like I get nothing tangible out of that. I get no money out of that, but I get satisfaction out of that, I guess. And there's something deeply psychological about that feels like these other forms of gamification or gamification that might work for one person but doesn't work for another person, you've got to run multiple modalities around that to engage different psychological types.
Yeah, and it comes from two places. So like you said, we do have those multiple campaign types. The reason for that is, there's a couple reasons for that. And I think you hit the nail on the head. The biggest reason for me doing it strategically as part of the product vision of creating more engagement opportunities is just like you said, you do have to hit those different psychological profiles in your audience because a message that works, even though they both might want the same product, like whatever your product is, what motivates somebody is generally different. There's a few different types of motivation. And so if you just always said like every month we're doing like the giveaway, we're giving away a pair of pants from our store, like A, people get tired of that. But then B, you just, a lot of people look at a giveaway and I'm one of the people, I usually like never win a giveaway. So I run a giveaway platform. I never win a giveaway partially because I can't enter on my own site. But I feel like I'm a person who doesn't actually enter many giveaways because I'm like, I'll never win. But if there's something where it's gamified in a way where I feel like I can control my fate, oh, if I refer a person, I'm going to get something out of it. Or if I do this, I can climb the leaderboard. Like you said, I'm always somebody my friends describe me as, oh, Josh, he chases rabbits. Like he's on a bike cycling. Like he's always got to catch the next person in front of him, no matter how far away they are. And so like the leaderboard modality works for me. And so that kind of different gamifications, I tell people like, hey, if you're constantly wanting to engage, you should be doing rotating like the gamification. One quarter you do this type of entry, the other quarter you do this type of campaign. And then also came from just the requests of different campaigns that people were asking us to do. So we'd have people saying, hey, I'm launching a new product in 6 months. How can I build an audience around this new product that we're launching on our store? They have an existing audience, they have a store, but they want to build a buzz around the new product. And so the concept of gamifying a wait list. Yeah, you can run a wait list campaign or you could run reward levels leading up to the product launch. There's all sorts of things you can do to help create buzz around that launch of a new product. And so, you know, you might be doing that for, that might be your focus as marketing for 3 months. And then the next 3 months, say, hey, we're just going to focus on getting customer referrals. We're going to run a referral campaign for 3 months. And that way the marketer can control what they're doing with their audience. So they keep it varied. And the variation, as you said, keeps the different audience, the audience members engaged, because some people might tune out for a while and then they'll tune into the next thing.
And how important is it for you to be integrated into a whole lot of other parts of the stack outside the core e-commerce platform? Because it feels like in a world where almost every single merchant is running some form of membership model or they're running some form of loyalty program, whether it be Yotpo, whether it be Stamped, whether it be any of these other platforms and programs that are also, that also they themselves then tend to be integrated into something like Klaviyo or CDP or something, that so that when an update is made within that core platform, it can update the status inside the Klaviyo profile, and then that can trigger off workflows and emails and everything else. So it feels like, sure, someone could run your platform in a standalone way, but if they've already got an existing incentive system in place of some description, it feels like you would need to be integrated into that by definition to get the holistic use out of the platform that you envision, because there's nothing worse than running totally different platforms for your loyalty, for your membership, for your gamification. Like it feels like that could very rapidly turn into a bit of a disjointed process if you earn something that is not run or at least delivered through your existing loyalty, membership, rewards platform of some description.
Yeah, I'd say two of the biggest, you mentioned two different types of integration there. So I'm going to separate the two. So there's integration with, I would say, common other tools that people use across the board, like Klaviyo, like MailChimp, like CRMs, like HubSpot, like anywhere where people are storing, like as a central repository as customer data, that is what I would say is like critically important. That's been a huge win for us. Like all of a sudden, like people are using MailChimp, then all of a sudden we started getting requests like, oh, and like that just took off like crazy as MailChimp changed their pricing and structure. And now Klaviyo is going through the same thing. Now that they've IPO'd, they're changing their pricing and structure. And now there's a whole bunch of other platforms coming up and everybody's like, you support this one. Because everybody wants that central repository of customer data. So you have to be integrated with that as a baseline. In terms of the other integrations, there's so many other players in the space. It would be nearly impossible for us to be integrated fully with each of the platforms as a small business today. But it is our goal to have tools that make it easy to integrate. So like embed parts of it into your site, to be able to tell us programmatically if you do the integration, or we help you programmatically set it up on your site. So that if you're on the membership site, it already knows who you are. So if you're taking actions in a contest, you don't have to enter your email again. Because what people ask us for is not necessarily, they don't directly ask for the integration. What they ask us for is, if I already have a relationship in some way with this customer, I don't want to make them have to do extra hoops to tell you this bit of information we already know. So that's the integration point we have with embedded components and using scripts to tell us like, hey, this is who this person is. Don't make them enter this information again. And the same thing with emails. So we don't want to make it, I'll give you a good example with email integrations. So like people might come to us and say, I've already got a list of 100,000 people and I want to give them all a referral link. Do I have to import them into your system to get the referral link, like that I can send out to everybody and then export from your system back into Klaviyo and then send the email with the merge tag? And we're just like, no, that is way too much work for you. You can just do this one merge tag with a link that, because Klaviyo knows the email address and we call it instant sign up. And it just generates a link, puts it in the email and says, get your referral codes on this page. And they click the link, they get the referral code, they're opted into whatever campaign is being run. It could be a waitlist, it could be the contest, like you said, it could be a leaderboard, and they're automatically in it. And that's a really simple integration. It's not even fully integrated with their website, which we could also do. It just gets more complex the more the website and everything, or it requires a plugin on that website to do. But just as a simple way, like our goal with the integration, the way we think about it is we have to be integrated with the central repositories, and then we have to be integrated in a way that makes it easier for their customers to interact with, because we don't want, no marketer wants their customers to jump through hoops, nor should they, to like engage with them. They want to make the engagement as simple, straightforward, and easy as possible. In fact, that's even advice I give to marketers, because I'd say a common mistake that some marketers will make is they say, I want to run a giveaway contest and I'm going to add a leaderboard and then I'm going to do rewards. And then I'm going to also have this running at the same time in the same campaign. And it's okay. Can you explain that in one email to your customer in the headline of the email that you're going to get them to click on? And they're like, maybe we'll just do the giveaway.
Let's take the path of least resistance here. Let's
time and not complicate it, because the goal should always be to make it simple and easy for your audience to engage with.
And how do you guys think about overall go-to-market strategy, in the sense that I don't see your app in the Shopify app store? I'm guessing there probably is, or maybe it's called something else in the app store. But I feel like a lot of these SaaS enablement technologies, they rely on being in the app store and being represented in the app store as their primary source of business, particularly for the Shopify platform. But it feels like this is so broad-based that someone might not even know what to call your type of platform. Like they wouldn't even necessarily, even if they want the types of things your platform does, they might not even necessarily know what to type into Google to find you. So what does your go-to-market motion look like, in the sense that it feels like there's a lot of education that goes along with the implementation, or even getting the chance to convert someone to use your platform? It feels like there's a fair bit of an education component to teach merchants that this option exists in the market and that you can actually even run these campaign types.
I think there's a couple of things you mentioned there that I'd call out again. So in terms of, is there education involved? I'd say, yeah, there's always education involved, even for something simple. If somebody has never run a giveaway before, it seems really simple, but there's all sorts of things like, we've had people say, oh, I'm going to give away this gun. Whoa.
There can't give away guns.
Firearms. Different states have different rules and different countries.
Any controlled anything.
There's different rules. And we've helped people run like stores for pot shops and stuff like that. We've helped people run those kind of giveaways, but they have to be aware there's like different rules. So there's always, no matter what you're doing and how simple it seems, there's always some sort of education, which is I think part of what we try and provide with support and offering, like onboarding with people. So we always do, if they pay for a business plan, like we always do an in-person onboarding to walk people through and answer those questions, because that's key to success. Because if they do something wrong and they screw it up, they don't want to screw up their brand by screwing up a contest that they're running or run foul of the law. Most people are doing things small enough, it doesn't really matter, but it's always better to be safe. And then, so yes, education is required. In terms of our our personal go-to-market strategy, we obviously run our own campaigns and contests on a regular basis to show people through like the website and through like our own promotions. Like we run ads that often will point to like our own promotions. Like we gave away for Halloween, we're giving away 8 pounds of candy for your office. So we were trying to target marketers who work in an office and they want candy to give away. And so we gave away like 8 pounds of candy. It's just this fun thing. And it showed them like, oh, I can do a voting thing. Do you want chocolate or fruity candy? And so it showed them the feature of the product and walked them through the education. And then we got to give somebody 8 pounds of candy, which is always fun. And so like we do promotions like that throughout the year. We do run ads, like I said, but we try and connect them as much as possible to our own engagement stories to demonstrate what we're doing as part of the ad campaign, what we want other people to do with the site. And then I would say, in terms of an actual showing up in the Shopify app store, that's something that we would like to be there. We had started down the path of, and quite frankly, we had a developer building it and the developer was doing a not great job of doing it and getting it approved. And so we had some issues and had to restart the process. So we should have started a long time ago. I would like to be in the app store there. But then we are connected directly anyway. So there's still a way to add the script for Kickoff Labs to embed things in the page. We have a guide for helping people do it. The plugin really just makes all that stuff a little bit simpler for the marketer because it'll just plug it in directly instead of them having to manually place something in their template.
Totally. And I guess in the meantime, you could always build a private app that then can basically be installed by the individual store owner once you engage with them. So yeah. I guess there's a few different pathways to getting there on the public app store. So yeah, that sounds... But it's quite easy for you to, through your ads also, to target Shopify merchants, et cetera. So you can, through targeting, you can make sure that you're becoming embedded in that ecosystem, whether you're in the app store or not. So I guess there's a few different targeting options you've got there. And if we had to look at the percentage of your business today that is composed of e-commerce merchants versus other like brand websites or other websites that are maybe just info-based websites, they're not necessarily, or maybe they're blogs or they're whatever, they're not necessarily directly targeted at an e-commerce function. What would you say the split, because I'm guessing in the very beginning, e-commerce was a little bit further down the track. And so maybe that was a small percentage at the beginning, but I'm guessing it dominates the use cases for the platform today. But is it like 90% e-commerce merchants, or are you finding that just about anyone who runs a website at all is a good candidate for you?
I hate saying we target everybody because we really don't. You have to be a good customer at Kickoff Labs. You generally have to have something that you're selling. So we don't get a lot of like just information websites or people that are making money through like ads or advertising. So if they're building like a free app that's like advertising or something, like we're typically not there. Our other type of customer, not e-commerce, would be, for example, like Match.com, like launching a new app or like promoting a new app and running a giveaway with like their members. But to me, they're just a variation. I view them as like a variation of e-commerce because they're selling a product.
A subscription. They're selling a subscription.
You're buying a product basically from a company like that. And they're looking for ways to engage and get them. So to be a customer of Kickoff Labs, it does work best if there's something that you're selling, if there's something at a root that somebody's going to put down a credit card for eventually, right? And so is what Match does, is that e-commerce or not? I consider it e-commerce. It's online commerce, and we want to be in the middle of it because we can help and engage with the audience. In terms of the split, it's 60-40. So 60% of people are doing like a, what I would say, what you would call like more traditional e-commerce. Like there's a store with a checkout button and a link that's not a subscription. And then the other 40% is maybe like startups or existing businesses, like I said, like a Match, who's somebody who's selling something. If somebody comes to us and they say, we're building a website for beer lovers, like one of our ideas, and we're just going to have this blog, and can you grow our audience? Like the hard part becomes, what's the incentive, right? What's the incentive or the motivation? What do you get at the leaderboard? What do you get for rewards? And the answer from a lot of those people is, I don't know, like I don't have anything that I'm selling on the site. Like I can't really grow it. And eventually those people might get to the point where they're selling merch, or they might get to the point where they're like, they have a huge advertising business on the back end. They're a huge YouTube channel. Cause we've had like people with large YouTube channels But typically those people also have a merch store. They've gotten to the point where they also have a commerce part or a subscription membership community that they're selling. There is something that they're selling by time they get to that point where I would no longer consider them an info site or anything like that.
Makes sense. It could be something as a quick purchase link in bio, something that simple, right? That they can get something out. Or I can use me as an example. I sell my consulting services as a subscription through Squarespace Commerce, right? Mm-hmm. So you sign up, you put your credit card in, and you pay and subscribe to those services for a duration, 1, 3, 6, 12 months, whatever it is. And it makes it easy for the customer to engage with me. And because it's just simply like any other e-commerce model, and they put their credit card in for that, like any other subscription software or anything else. So they're used to that model, and it just makes it super easy for them and frictionless for them and low overhead and almost no admin for me to manage the actual purchasing process either. And it feels like your model would work for even service providers like me that are selling something on a subscription basis.
Yeah, I think I would. If you came to us and said, how will this work for me? We'd have a discussion about like your audience size and like the number of subscriptions you're selling. Because I do tend to find like a good customer is somebody that has like a good seed audience to begin with, or they have a promotion strategy where they know how they're going to grow. Like they've already engaged with some influencers that are going to like market their strategy. Individual agencies are good customers, typically in the sense of like they run other customers' promotions for us. Like in like typically agencies, because you know you're probably not dealing with 2,000 or 1,000 customers a month in your like consulting subscription. Otherwise, you'd have a whole team and it'd be a whole different business than just you. It might not work as well because you're dealing with such small numbers that the engagement is better off with you just engaging personally with that audience or engaging like in a private Discord or like with the audience. And that might be a better form of engagement that scales for your audience than dealing with our platform. Not trying to discourage you from trying our platform. I just say, like, this is where we're...
The use cases are pretty clear what works and what not work, what doesn't work after this much time.
I've seen people trying to promote themselves like as an individual without an... Or like their sales are like, oh, we're thrilled if we get 50 sales this year. That's not like the scale or thing that really works because you're going to be much better off one-to-one, cold emailing, working with partners, the other things that work for you to grow your personal business that way.
Makes sense. I guess the other thing that you could do is you could retarget if you had a pixel on there. Like I don't run ads, but if you wanted to retarget people and you wanted to drive them to a landing page with a sweepstakes that said, hey, if you subscribe to these services during the month of June, we're going to give you an all expenses paid trip to Mexico or something like that. Yeah. Are you going to come? You're going to be able to come meet me in person, and we're going to put you up in a local hotel in Cancun. Or you could do something like that. I feel like high value services like that. Yep. You've got to do something a little bit creative that isn't necessarily targeted at. Oh, you get 20% off the first month of that doesn't really work. But I think if you can have something that's a little bit more tangible that goes along with that, that is more targeted at high net worth individuals that appreciate. Yeah. International travel, for example, that might be a better value thing to run.
And that brings up a really good point is matching the reward. Because we talked about like the general concept earlier of if people are going to give you information or engage, like there's something in it for them. And it's a really important best practice. We tell people all the time to think about matching the reward with how what you want out of the audience, right? Or the audience that you want to attract. And so you can run like an e-commerce site can run a successful promotion where maybe they're just giving away a $250 gift card in a month. But we always tell people even that because it's a gift card, it feels, oh, what is it? I'm just getting a gift card to this store. And maybe I hadn't even heard of the store before, or somehow I ended up on their newsletter list, but I'm not sure how. And they, you might not even remember the store. But like we tell people one of the best practices if you're running that contest is then to list like, here's five popular products you could buy with this gift card in your contest. So like we're letting you choose, but we're not just choosing that you get this pair of pants. We're saying you get a $250 gift card to our site, but here's five products that you could get because you have to give people that incentive of, oh yeah, like I want one of those five things. I want the pan or like whatever it is. I would like to win that thing or earn that thing through your campaign. And so matching it to the audience is important. And then that distinction between a high value and a low value. So I recently talked to a tourism agency and they had a good way of thinking about the distinction of like when they do, like they would do a high value giveaway where they're giving away, they're basically the trip, like we'll fly you in, we'll put you up, you eat at the nice restaurant for the weekend, the super high value thing. And then they're also running smaller things. Like literally, they would run like a $100 gift card to this local restaurant, or even like to the point of even they had three tiers. There's that $100 giveaway. And then they had the third tier, which is literally they're giving away like a parking pass to the beach, which is like a $15 value thing. And I was asking them how they thought about the different levels. And they said, they think about it in terms of their calendar year as a tourism agency, is that the $10 parking pass is like the give, the kind of like the instant win thing, but it's like a weekly thing where they can just run it every week. Doesn't cost them anything. It's practically automated. They can give away this $10 and it keeps people engaged throughout the year. And then three quarters out of the year, they'll run like a medium sized giveaway where it's like a night stay at this place or like a nice dinner at this restaurant. And they work that with partners to promote the partner business. And then the big giveaway, they say, oh, that's how we drive engagement during the off season or the slow season when like we don't have much else going on and like the tourism industry is really down. So we need a way to get people excited about the next year's tourism. And so it's, hey, we're going to give away, they'll probably start up in a few weeks for the summer of 2020, the big summer giveaway. And they run that promotion for the for 2 months over the winter to get people excited about, really keyed up about the big thing. And they rotate through those three levels of promotions, all of which gather, ironically, I asked them, does one get you more leads than the other? And the answer is, there's actually no. Like they get just as many leads during the season with the $10 parking pass as the other one. But to your point, they feel like they get different audiences. So the bigger giveaway gets an audience from out of state and out of location. The smaller giveaways get the audience from like the town 2 hours away that people can drive in for the day and enjoy their day and go back. And so it's like they're thinking about their audience and they're matching their reward or the prize to that specific audience that they want to target.
And I guess it's potentially targeting also a different buyer persona in terms of net worth. Maybe the big massive win is someone who would normally come to their website looking for a high cost trip because that's the net worth bracket that they fall in. And somebody that maybe is would bother going for a $10 parking coupon, maybe there's somebody that would normally only do local travel because maybe they're not necessarily, exactly, they don't have a ton of disposable income. And so you can break them out into lots of distinctive segments. Even if you're running those giveaways concurrently, you're going to attract different people with different things, always.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think there's my point overall that people should take away from this is think about like your audience, what has value to your audience, and then the segments within your audience, even are there different things that would motivate them, either different types of campaigns that we talked about earlier or different value levels of prizes or different types of prizes that would motivate them. But to in general always try and create that alignment, because if a store just says like the thing I hate is if they say we're going to give away cash, like not even a gift card, we're just gonna give away cash, or we're gonna give away an iPad. And then they're like, hey, we got 10,000 people to sign up, because you can actually get a lot of people to sign up for a giveaway if you just say, I'm going to give away an iPad, but they might not be customers at your store, right? They're just in it because there's lots of sites on the internet that just track giveaways that people can enter, and like they put them up because they know how to search for giveaways. They know how to like find them. And you just get the flood of people from giveaway websites that come to your contest because you're giving away an iPad. You're not giving away that thing that's the gift card to the local restaurant or the thing that's related to your product. If you sell coolers, then maybe you want to give away like, I don't know, maybe a bad example. Like if you sell coolers, you want to give away like non-alcoholic beer or something, like something that goes with your product that your people who are into your product would also want a year's supply of this beer or something, or this beverage. But if you sell coolers, giving away an iPad is going to get you people that want to buy iPads, like not coolers necessarily, unless it's like some sort of Bluetooth enabled cooler with a fan. I think one of those is on Kickstarter or something. Like unless it's got an iPad integration, you're not really attracting the right people with that contest.
And do you typically recommend that merchants have different qualifying criteria depending on the value of that particular contest? So just to run with your example that you already gave, maybe to get the parking pass, you only need name, email address, and I don't know, town or city or zip code or something like that, so that you can give the right people the right thing. Maybe the next tier up, you've got to give a little bit more personal information around preferences. And then maybe the big daddy prize, they've got to fill out quite a lot of information around preferences, maybe even income level or places that you've traveled before, just to give us an idea of the types of trips you like. Maybe the tiering of the sweepstakes also has tiering in terms of the threshold of personalization that we will be able to do out of this because we're spending so much more money on the high-end thing.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. And that's something we see as well, is that people, the better contests do typically think about the scaling. So that one with the larger prize, they were asking a form that was much larger. The parking pass was like, just give us your email. We just want to add you to our list. I think they had for first name too. It was like, first name and email, we don't care. Just join our email list. And then maybe somebody who joined would then later on do the larger one and enter in that larger form of the campaign to get on the, to get for the big prize. So I think that's a really good point. The other thing that we do in the platform to make that kind of easy transition is we used to have people ask us all the time, oh, can I create like a 5-page form that like asks one and then two and does the email first and then this and this. And that kind of got us into the space of, oh, we don't really want to be a type form or like a survey company. We want to make it related to the engagement. So we added a feature of like form actions. So like you can ask people for first name and email, but then to earn extra entries, maybe you get 5 more entries for subscribing to our SMS list. And so you give us the phone number, you get 5 extra entries in the contest, which improves your chances of winning. So it's again that we're giving them that trade-off, or we're giving the end user the trade-off of saying, do I want to give up this information? Is it worth 5 more entries to me to give this information? And a lot of times the answer is obviously yes. Like those are really popular things. And you can rotate those form options of, oh, I want to add phone number. And then the next month it's, I might want to collect like a preference, or maybe I've got 4 different form options on there that people can earn extra entries in. And so we're giving them a chance to improve their odds of winning. And then you mentioned like the purchase. I think that's something we give a lot of entries. We encourage people, like if somebody makes a purchase, you want to give them a lot of entries and really increase their chances of winning. And if they refer somebody that makes a purchase, maybe do that even like both ways, like both sides get all those extra entries. And so we make it possible when somebody does a purchase that the person who made the purchase and the person who referred the purchase is getting all these extra entries in the competition. Typically, most states and most countries have rules around you have to be able to provide a way to enter without a purchase, but they don't have rules around, hey, you can enter without a purchase, but you just have one entry. Whereas everybody that made a purchase might have 250 entries to win.
But that's a nice little elegant way around the challenges of dealing with legalities.
And so it creates a little bit of a, I wouldn't call it a loophole. It is intentionally, you still do have a chance to win. And as long as they're saying, here's how many total entries there are, which we have a way of displaying it, it's a fair competition because I'm 1 out of 10,000 or I'm 1 out of 200. Like I have, these are my odds. As long as you tell people the odds, you're typically falling within the rules of most locations. I'm not a lawyer, but we've talked to our lawyers a lot and we've drafted all the legalese around the types of contests that you run that get created automatically. And we typically feel really good about where we're at with that legalese.
And I guess 2 quick questions and they're related. First of all, do you target only US-based merchants because of that legalese that you know like the back of your hand and that's the market you purchase? Or you target global merchants and you put the caveat in there, hey, we don't know the law in your particular region, so therefore you need to handle that. But I guess if they're an international e-commerce website, they're going to potentially be dealing with that anyway in the sense that, hey, their customers might be all around the world and they might ship internationally. And so therefore the people that come to their website and will enter their sweepstakes or whatever will tend to be international customers. And so I guess there has to be both a caveat from you to the merchant, but there also has to be a little bit of a caveat and some kind of fine print wording that makes it very clear that, hey, this conforms to the laws of the state of California or whatever it might be, and your local laws may vary. And therefore, there has to be some sort of protection for you as the supplier of the technology, but there also has to be a little bit of protection for the merchant, and there also has to be protection for the consumer. So there's a 3-way bit of protection going on there.
Yeah, so we do have about 30 to 40% of our business comes from outside of the US, so from merchants that are outside. So it's a pretty sizable chunk. We actually get a lot from us. It's basically like we had a lot from Australia and then a lot from different European Union countries are our 2 primary locations. The Australia one just struck me as really random. I don't know how we took off in Australia, but I've been on a lot of oddly timed calls because of the time difference with larger customers in Australia. So, but we find typically like people, if you're a merchant in one of those countries, they tend to understand or at least have an idea of like where they need to contact a lawyer about. It also gives us the knowledge at this point. So like we know in Australia, for example, no matter, it's not as freewheeling as here in the US or Canada. Like no matter what kind of raffle you're doing, you have to register it with the state that you're in. There's an easy form. You go to the form, you register and you say, here's the type of raffle. And unless you're above a certain dollar amount in the giveaway, it's pretty much just a like submit and you're just informing the state like, hey, this raffle is going on and I'm doing this. We don't help people do that. We point them to like, hey, this is what we think you have to do. You consult your attorney, but most of the time they seem to be aware of like, that this rule exists. And the same thing with different European Union countries in terms of like more there, it's about like the privacy because their privacy laws,
GDPR.
GDPR, their privacy laws are typically much more stringent than what we're doing. So they have to have a lot more knowledge about the data we're collecting behind the scenes about the person and they want to enable that collection and like all sorts of little tiny things like, you can't force people to do the checkbox that says they subscribe, and you can't force like some, there's other little tiny rules that are gotchas that we have some facts about for people, for customers in those locations that the product can enable you to do the things. But yeah, we do have to leave it up to those locations and say, here's the facts. But again, we're not lawyers and we're certainly not lawyers in the EU. Like we're three steps removed from that.
Yeah, makes complete sense. And what is on your radar for, say, the next 12 months in terms of new functionality or roadmap for the platform? You might not be able to give the whole thing away. What kinds of things are your customers asking for right now that you either don't yet do or was already on your own internal radar to say, hey, we don't do this today. We would really like to do this thing. So we're going to add that over the next, say, 12 months. What's high on your priority list?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you a list of things that we get asked or we're thinking about, not necessarily like what the roadmap is, but we get asked about, we don't currently have the ability to do like user-generated content contests. So like things around enabling them. And that fits just in terms of where I'd like it to be on our roadmap. Like to me, that's a really great form of engagement. People submitting user entries. We've had some people like hack the system to do it today. Give us the link to the YouTube video that you did about our product. And like they link to the YouTube video, but then we don't enable the voting on the best one or anything like that. But we've seen it because again, people are twisting our platform to do a little bit of that collection of user-generated content already. So it's something we'd like to make easier with a moderation capability and be able to like, because if you just said like anybody can upload something and show it for people to vote on, you do not want to do that because people will upload the worst stuff.
That you probably will be doing something illegal.
You will be hosting and uploading some of the worst things. It doesn't matter. If there's an upload form, people will fill it out with crap and sometimes literal crap. But then the other side of things, we do get asked about like instant wins and stuff, and we can do that today. It's a really common thing. Most merchant sites almost enable that by default, those things. And I don't view it as a super great level of engagement, but we're looking at things with AI tools that have come out in terms of, because you mentioned like the quizzes and stuff like that. If you can imagine having entering by having a conversation with somebody and like them asking about your preferences in a more personalized way and learning more about you, that's something we've considered that would probably have a lot more value to the merchants if it was more of a conversation style instead of this click here, do this, click here, do this. And so we've thought about, could we create like a conversation style, either quiz or a conversation style like trivia that like brings their site? Because you can actually do some really cool things. You can have AI look at a commerce site, because I've been playing with it, and you can say, come up with some trivia about this specific shop. And it'll say, hey, what's the featured product for the month of April? It'll ask their trivia question and generate four options. And it knows what the right answer was because you'd marked it somehow on your site as a featured product. And so if we can productize something like that in the next year, I'd be thrilled. It's something that we're looking at, like how can we create more personalized for the shop owner, for the store owner, something that educates the audience about their product as well as makes it a fun level of engagement. That's what we're thinking about, is like that education plus engagement aspect.
Or you could do, and you've probably already thought of this too, an Easter egg hunt type scenario on a website. You could say, on five products on our website, we have put in the description text, at the end of the description text, we have put this secret code word or something like that. And then you'd have to find those throughout the website, and then you'd have to enter those SKUs or the name or the URL of those products or something into the form. And then, hey, if you find all five, and you get X entries into whatever, or you get X prize or whatever the case may be. So it feels like the Easter egg thing from an engagement perspective also feels like a pretty good way to go on an e-commerce website.
Yeah. No, that's something we've also thought about that goes in line with that AI, because what people struggle with is coming up with, what should I put as the Easter egg? And so this is what we're working on, is like having the tools that can now scan websites and saying, we'll come up with some ideas for you for these actions. Because when we've tried to help people with Easter eggs before, that's where people struggle with, oh, what should I do? People struggle with linking to their Facebook profiles and saying, like us on Facebook. Like they struggle figuring that out. And so the Easter egg is this other level of functionality where it's like, oh, where do I put it on my site? Or what should the Easter egg be? And we could actually scan your website and come up with 10 suggestions for you and then make it easy to just say, nope, this Easter egg and this one are good for this competition. And that's the kind of thing that we're looking at adding.
Love it. Love it. Fantastic use of AI across the system. And I do notice that you tout that on your website, that you talk about all the ways that AI is being integrated into the platform to make running these competitions easier, which I think is, in terms of adoption rates, anything you could do to make it easier for them to adopt and deploy a new program or a new campaign type. Yep. I think that's where AI is perfectly suited to help in these scenarios, almost like a co-pilot alongside you when you're trying to create these programs and how they can be interlinked and overlap, et cetera, and target specific niches and different demographics and, yeah, and different segments, basically. Yeah, absolutely perfect use of AI. And how do you guys make your money? You're a traditional SaaS platform in the sense that you've got these tiers I noticed there, and then you've got like a hobby, premium, business, enterprise. It starts at $12 a month, which is obviously pretty bloody cheap. So, and then you jump up to $48.99 and $199. And even at $199, I guess if you're an at scale brand, then, you know, up to 25,000 leads for $199 a month. This is, you know, it can cover 5 brands, custom domains, you know, it's you run the gamut there, but it feels like it's based on a foundation of how many leads are covered at that tier.
Yeah, our pricing, we've always wanted to be fair in our pricing. And so there's some of our competitors do about, if you have 100,000 people on your email list, then we're going to automatically put you into the $500 like a month tier. Or if you collect 10,000 leads, you can never go back down to the lower tier. And you're stuck now because you want to keep that lead score, the information, and unless you export it and delete leads. And I hate playing games like that with customers because it just encourages weird behavior, like people deleting leads in your system or canceling and resubscribing again to get the lower price. And our pricing has always been based on like your usage. And so you could scale it up and say, we're doing a huge promotion this month, versus you could scale it down and say, for the next few months, we're just doing the evergreen, collecting a few hundred leads a month. So we don't expect a bunch to come in. And then it lets it scale back up if you do a huge promotion off of it. So we basically want to charge people to be fair about the leads they're getting per month. And it also makes it easy for us when we have larger customers come in to know, ask them questions about, oh, they say, what size plan do I need? Because we have custom plans that go above that. And it's easy for us to ask questions like, oh, if you have, what's your click-through rate in your newsletters? What do you do for advertising campaigns? And what's your click-through rates? And we can judge based on common conversion goals that we have. Like, hey, you're going to do about 50,000 leads a month, it sounds like. That's just our guess. And we're pretty good at coming up with those numbers for people and telling them like what kind of plan they should be on if they're a larger brand.
Makes sense. And I guess for you, an entrant is a lead, right? At the end of the day, you consider every entrant a lead. So that makes complete sense. And if people want to get a hold of you, would you prefer that people go straight to your website? I'll put all the links in the show notes, of course, but it's app.kickofflabs.com or just kickofflabs.com. Yep. And then you're on LinkedIn, obviously. How do you like people typically to find you and learn more about the platform and about what you offer and about how, I guess, it can help improve their business? And I'm guessing that education piece is pretty important. Like before someone even signs up, they may actually want to speak to someone about some of the little bit of the strategic thinking that you were mentioning before, because they might not have ever done anything like this before. So they got no idea where to start.
Yeah.
So how do people find you and start that discussion?
Yeah, the best way. So kickofflabs.com, you can go there. You can sign up for free and just play around with the software on our free account level. So there's no entering a credit card to sign up. You can always like, so I prefer people just attend if they've got questions about strategy or anything, just anything. I tell people email support@kickofflabs.com. There's people there besides me that can answer the question, because if you email me, you might be waiting, if I'm not around for a week, you might be waiting around for an answer for too long. If they do want to get in touch with me, they can always email josh@kickofflabs.com. So if you want to get in touch with me directly, or like I said, if you have a question specifically about strategy or, you know, running a promotion, just email the support address. And then online, I'm Josh Legard on Threads. And so I've been mostly spending my time on Threads, and Kickoff Labs is use Kickoff Labs on Threads right now. And obviously we have a Facebook page and, you know, most of the other socials as well. And you can engage that way.
Fantastic. Look, it's super easy to find you everywhere, wherever anyone happens to be, they'll definitely be able to find you and engage with you, which is great. Now we're coming to the end of our time together, and I really appreciate all the information and education you gave me today, because again, this is something that I'm not too familiar with or an expert in by any stretch of the imagination. But now I get to turn the microphone over to you. I get to let you ask me one question, any question you like. It can be personal or professional. So Josh Legard of Kickoff Labs, what is your question for me today?
What is my question for you? I would say, so my question I always like to ask people is what's the best thing giveaway you've won, or the best thing you've won?
I'm a bit like you in that I don't think I've ever won anything directly, but my wife and her sister have won quite a few. So most of the time, it's my wife will enter, and then it's often a social competition on like Instagram or something, and she's got to tag a friend or something like that. And then the friend has to respond in order for you to both be entered into the competition. And my wife does enter quite a few of these on Instagram. So I'm constantly getting the ding, oh, I need to respond to this message. We've won a fair few things that way, to be perfectly honest. We've won some really nice dinners out where places that we might not otherwise go because they're quite flash and quite expensive. And so we've had a couple of those. I think food has probably been our biggest winning opportunity. And sometimes it's like a bag of premium nuts or something like that, that they actually ship to you. So you don't even have to go out and get them. Yeah. So I think almost all of the competitions that I can remember that we've won have been food related. So yeah, like I'm not a big giveaway guy. I don't enter a lot of competitions, but my wife does. And we've gotten pretty lucky because she just has good luck at winning competitions. Or maybe there's a few people, like they might say there's one person or whatever, and then they end up giving away a few winners worth of stuff. But yeah, we've had pretty good luck through Instagram competitions.
Yeah, I think it's a good lesson. It's worth entering for people like you and me. You get discouraged with the really large competitions, but if there's a small brand that you like, it's just as a way to reward the small brand, like entering their small competition, you typically have much bigger odds, right? If it's a small store and you're not like a mega commerce store or a small restaurant or something, like do them a solid, enter the competition because your odds are typically pretty good. And usually when I talk to people who they say they win a lot, the commonality is I'm always just entering whatever store I like, I enter their competition, like, and it's usually smaller businesses. And it's another thing I like about our product and our customers is I feel like we're supporting like smaller businesses and medium-sized businesses in a way that they're not, it's not walmart.com typically.
Your odds of winning are like a million to one.
Yeah, your odds of winning a million to one. Most of those smaller brands that your wife is probably entering, the odds of winning are probably like 1 in 100 or much better in most cases.
Yeah, and even if they're a reasonable brand in terms of size, if they don't have that much name recognition, then fewer people are, even if it was open to an unlimited number of entrants over a month's time, or whatever, they just won't necessarily have that many people that enter because they wouldn't necessarily see that ad on Instagram or whatever. And so by definition, your odds automatically get better if their visibility is relatively low.
Exactly. Yeah.
Makes sense. Listen, this has been a fantastic conversation, Josh. I've really enjoyed it. I wish you every success with Kickoff Labs. It sounds like you're doing something pretty groundbreaking and very innovative. And I always like to see innovators in our space doing cool things that make merchants' lives easier. At the end of the day, that's what we're here to do. We're here to help make merchants successful over time. And it feels like you're doing that. So super appreciate your time. Can't wait to chat to you again soon, my friend.
Thank you.
Are you a B2B or D2C e-commerce merchant? Then head over to greenwoodconsulting.net to learn how we can help you scale your business.